This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministries, where we'll show you how to remove any and all debt that you've accumulated, no matter how small or how large your debt may be. My name is Steve Holbrook, and in our ministry, we use biblical principles to show you just how God intends for us to be handling money. And we'll teach you in our 9-week small group Bible study. The Bible study is called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Along with the biblical principles, we have practical applications. These are financial tools that you have access to that's going to help you manage your finances and your debt. Learn more at compasscatholic.org. Just click on Books and Studies. John and Evelyn Bean join me today. They are the co-founders of Compass Catholic. And over the past couple of months, we've done a number of shows related to marriage. And when we were discussing today's topic, John, you made a comment about wedding vows that I'd like for you to share with everyone.
The one thing that isn't in the wedding vows is that I promise you financial fidelity.
Oh, financial fidelity.
Yeah, how about that one, huh? We promise to obey and love and honor, but there's nothing in there about financial fidelity.
And what do you mean by financial fidelity?
Well, you got to be on the same page with your money. You can't be hiding things from the other person. So some of the signs you might be looking for is a secret bank account. Or
wait. So this is not financial fidelity. This is financial infidelity.
Infidelity. Okay. Yes. This is the opposite of financial fidelity.
Okay.
So you might have a secret bank account that nobody knows about, or a credit card, or, you know, you're going out and spending all kinds of money without telling your spouse that you're spending this kind of money.
What about if you find there's missing cash in your bank account? That would be a big sign of financial infidelity.
Yeah, I don't think you can blame it on Johnny unless you're married to him. But, you know.
Back to a point you mentioned about spending more on the purchase without telling your spouse.
Yes.
Is there a dollar amount that you and Evelyn, I mean, $25, $50, $100,
typically, if it's more than $100 or $150, we'll probably talk to the other person.
But we really don't spend that much money.
No.
I mean, usually if we spend more than $50, we know, you know, it's somebody knows we're going shopping
right.
for something. So we always
do it together.
And either do it together, or I'll say, like, I'm going shopping for, let's say, our grandchildren for Christmas.
Right.
And we know it's going to be a little bit more than that.
I know to get out the armed car.
That's not true. What about, getting back to financial infidelity, what about late payment on bills because there's no money available when you thought there was money in the account?
Well, I think, you know, that's a great thought, Evelyn, and it's a problem. Or just not paying the bills,
mm-hmm.
you know, because nobody wants to take action. They don't want to take responsibility. They don't want to be accountable for making those payments or doing that stuff. And, you know, some people are kind of born, quote unquote, bookkeepers. And some people are so far away from that that, you know, it's a disaster if they even open up the checkbook.
Well, that goes to a question. How do you know financial infidelity is happening if one of the partners is handling all the finances and the other couldn't care?
I would think one of the biggest ways you can figure it out is if you find expensive purchases in the house that you didn't know anything about. For example, if I go out to the garage and John has a whole new set of golf clubs and a new golf bag, and I don't know anything about it, and I haven't seen any bills for it, or I haven't seen it on the credit card statement, I'm going to wonder what he's doing.
What about the missing cash from a bank account? How would you know if John was pilfering that out and...
Well,
you really never looked at the finances.
If I went to the bank and tried to get a cash out
okay.
and I couldn't because money was missing, or if
Good.
I charged something and it was declined because our credit card was up to the limit.
All yeah, the more reason spouses should be talking with each other about
this. Well, that's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key, Steve. As a married couple, you should be going through your budget. And even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes at the end of the month, talking about your finances and where you are, how much you saved this much, how much you spent, how much you think is going to come in next month.
So the real problem isn't the amount that people are spending. The real problem is the lack of communication and being totally open and honest about all the financial transactions. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
So I guess
that's extremely important.
So I guess the first thing is that everybody needs to be completely open and honest about every financial transaction.
What are some things that we can do as a couple to stay on the same page and maintain our financial fidelity?
So I would say if there's any mail that comes in, both people should look at it.
Okay.
Even if it's a bank statement that only has one name on it, the other person should be able to open it, look at it, ask questions about it, and get honest answers.
That's even more reason to open it up and look at it and talk about it if there's only one name on it.
There you go. Very true.
Yep. Yep.
And if you think, if thinking about that makes you uncomfortable, then you need to figure out why. Because if you're not willing to open up your finances to your spouse, why are you worried about them opening up their finances to you? You've got to go both ways.
Yeah,
you can't expect them to be honest and open if you're not being honest and open.
Right.
So how do you handle young... Nowadays, the trend seems to be the young couples have their own accounts and they're not merging the finances together.
Everybody's got to do what works for them in their marriage. And keeping their finances separate so that they each have access to different money, I don't think is the problem. I think it's when they have separate accounts and they don't share anything is the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that. There's kind of a trend where couples are waiting longer and longer to get married. I don't know what the average age is today, maybe 26 or 27. But the longer they wait, the more entrenched they become. You know, they got their own bank account, they got their own credit cards and all that kind of stuff. And then now all of a sudden, boom, you're married and things are supposed to change overnight. Well, sometimes it takes a while to work through that stuff. And if you're talking with each other all the time, communicating and talking about your finances, if before you got married, you both read through God, Marriage, and Money, and you got on the same page financially, you went to compasscatholic.org and downloaded that book and read through it and talked about the discussion questions, then I think it's going to be a lot easier. But if you're both coming out of a fog and you know, you're living in your own separate vacuums, then it's going to be a real problem.
You know, Steve, the one thing I ask couples when they tell us that their finances are separate is, what else are you keeping from your spouse? Because if you've got your finances boxed up with a little wall around them and you're not sharing that with your spouse, chances are there's probably going to be other things you're not sharing. And that's not what marriage is all about. So I would say another place to start is to talk about goals. You know, what is your future? On compasscatholic.org, under the resources tab, we have a spreadsheet with financial goals that'll help you list what you want to do. And that generally leads to a talk about finances. If you want to buy a car, add on to the house, buy a house, take a vacation, all that stuff requires money. So any goals that you talk about usually lead to financial discussions too.
And I think it's a good thing to sit down and maybe each one of you write down a list of things you want to accomplish in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, maybe 30 years. And you create this list. It's all your own list. And then your spouse creates their own list, and it's all their own list. And then you merge the two lists together and see what is the same. Because then you can work on those things together, and then you can prioritize those items that are different.
Well, and that's a good point, John, because there's going to be shared goals and there's going to be separate goals. And the shared goals are important, and the separate goals are okay, because you shouldn't have every second of the day with your spouse. You both need some space and some separate time. But what's not healthy is when your own personal goals override the joint goals.
Yes.
You can't have your own personal opinion take over the goals of the marriage.
That's
so I
true.
Totally
well,
agree.
Well, you know, you're in this together, so it's got to be together.
That was deep, wasn't it, Steve?
Very.
You don't know how deep that was.
But I think that's a great way to stay focused on what's important to you as a couple. And that's really what marriage is all about. What's important to you as a couple?
What about forgiving?
You mean if you find out that somebody's been dishonest or deceitful or hidden stuff from you?
Yeah, whatever. You know, are we supposed to automatically just forget and forgive, or forgive and forget, or
Well, what's that? I don't remember which verse it's from, but there's a verse in the Bible that says you don't forgive seven times, you forgive 70 times seven.
Yes.
So, yes, you need to forgive. You know, if you discover things that you didn't know about, let's be honest, we're all human and we all do things we regret. Sometimes we put our short-term goals against our long-term plans, but if you want to be forgiven for your mistakes, then you need to forgive your spouse for their mistakes.
So treat others the way you want to be treated.
Ah, I think that's the golden rule, isn't
it, Steve? I've heard that before someplace, yes, yes. What about counseling, Evelyn? Is that something that happens anymore?
Of course counseling it probably happens more now than it ever has before. Because I think there's a lot more layers of complication these days in marriages. It just seems like society gets us so tied up in things that aren't important that it's easy to get off track. So if you can't work on your financial issues on your own, we do strongly suggest that you seek marital counseling.
So what does that counselor look like? Who is that person?
I wouldn't go to another couple unless you knew that they were trained and able to really handle you. And I think there's different levels. I think we can help people with financial challenges.
Yes.
But if there's underlying issues with a marriage and there's psychological problems or drug abuse problems or addiction or problems or stuff like that, we certainly aren't capable of handling that.
Yeah, well, and I, you know, a lot of people aren't. I think depending on what the situation is, then you have to decide who you're going to go see first. And maybe you start with the priest.
I think it's a great place to start.
You know, you start with your priest. Your priest knows about all these other things. That's their job, is to know these kinds of people. And you know, let him hear what you are talking about, hear what the issues are, and make a recommendation. And if the priest refers you to some kind of a counselor, whatever kind it is, then number one, that person is probably going to be more responsive to you as a couple in working with you and meeting with you and helping to go through the issues.
Well, the other thing is if the counselor comes from your priest, they may also come from a faith perspective, which I think helps bring things into a different situation than just having somebody that's secular counsel you.
I think it's really important to bring faith into the counseling session, because when you've got the spirituality behind the basics of what you're trying to work on, it just makes it so much easier, so much more positive, and will help to keep you guided down the right path for the right reason.
You're listening to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministries. We have several Bible studies that are available to you. One that will show you how to manage the gifts that God has provided you, your time, your talent, your treasures. That Bible study is Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And another very popular Bible study that's available is called Set Your House in Order. Yes, even the Bible will tell you how to get prepared. Now, this study will help you organize all those important documents into one file, one binder. This will reduce or even eliminate all that stress of having to look all over your house for those documents. You can review all of our Bible studies and books simply by going to compasscatholic.org and click on Books and Studies. Now, today we're taking you through the meaning of financial infidelity. So, John, now that we've gone through counseling, how do you stay focused and on track with your finances?
Well, the most romantic thing that I can think of is doing a money date.
Ooh, a money date. Does that mean we're going to go out and spend money? Not?
Not.
So what's a money date?
Doesn't sound too romantic, does it?
Well, we've had money dates, so I know what they are. So explain to everyone who's listening with us about what a money date is.
Is this where John pays you to go out with him?
It's where John pays me to get out of the house so that he can be by himself.
You know, handling money as a couple affects every area of the marriage relationship. And so having a weekly money date is vital, because it establishes a habit of having regular financial conversations, even when there's no crisis.
And I think that's important, because we've seen so many couples that kind of push their finances to the side and they don't talk about it. They're not on the same page. And then all of a sudden there's a crisis. Somebody gets sick. Somebody loses a job. There's a hurricane and they lose their roof. And they've got that huge deductible on their insurance to pay. And then once the crisis occurs, everybody's in crisis mode, and that just doesn't make the conversation go well.
Well, the tension just ramps up and ramps up, and pretty soon everything's boiling over, and then you start blaming each other, and you know that's not a good thing. And if somebody starts that, and then you know the accusations become hurtful, you end up screaming instead of kind of talking softly and working things out. So if you're doing a weekly money date, then those kinds of things shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything better than regular, ongoing, consistent communications about any topic in marriage in order to keep it on track, but especially money, because that can fluctuate from month to month, from week to week. So that constant communication about money is really important.
So what are the things that we should be doing when we have a money date?
Well, I think the first thing is to select a time where you can focus. You don't want it to be bedtime when you're trying to put the children to bed and they're whiny and cranky and you're trying to get baths in. It needs to be a time when the two of you can sit down and focus on each other and really concentrate on what's important. So I would say the money date should start with prayer, because a lot of couples don't pray together regularly. So money date starting with prayer would be a good idea.
That sounds great.
What's next, John?
Well, probably I think you need to review your income and the spending for the week. How much came in, how much went out. Celebrate the progress the Lord has enabled you to make.
So let's take a closer look at each one of those. Praying together.
Praying together should be the first thing that you do on your date. You know, Jesus makes a remarkable promise in Matthew 18. He says, if two of you agree on earth about anything for which you are to pray, it shall be granted to you, my heavenly Father. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them.
And I would say most couples probably don't think about praying for their money unless it's, oh God, help us pay off this debt. You know, they don't pray regularly about where to spend money, how to spend money, using their money wisely, how much to give. And there's a whole bunch of things that you can talk about with God as far as your finances go. So it's important to invite God to be personally involved with how you earn and spend and save and give.
It's important to understand what's important to their spouse.
And that usually comes through prayer, because prayer is when you open up your heart.
I think we should make a strong recommendation, Evelyn, a recommendation to pray, because so many couples don't pray together on a regular basis. And if they would establish the habit of praying together daily, then, you know, that can change the whole relationship.
The whole dynamic.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to keep a prayer list. You know, so many times we tell people we're going to pray for them. We have people that ask us for prayers. We have people we know we need to pray for. And I saw a cartoon not too long ago where a guy is in church and he sees John Smith walking toward him. And he says, oh, I forgot to pray for John Smith. Dear Lord, please help John Smith. And then he greets the guy and says, hi, John, I've been praying for you. Well, that's... That's not quite what God had in mind when he's asking us to pray for people, you know? So if you have that list and you pray every day, then you can keep those prayers in the forefront of your mind on a daily basis.
Excellent. Excellent.
So what's the second thing we do on the money debt? I think it's review, right?
Yeah. You need to review your income and your spending so that you can make sure that you know where you are financially. You know, you don't use this as an opportunity to argue or to nag one another. Instead, use it as a time to discover the facts, because couples simply make better decisions when they're fully aware of their finances.
And, you know, in this area, John, it's so important in the language you use. If you say something like, we overspent our entertainment budget by $50 this month, that's a much different thing to say rather than, you spent too much money on going to the movies with your girlfriends.
You did.
Yeah, like I went to the movies with my girlfriends. But you can tell that there's a different tone in those two statements. So practice when you're reviewing your finances to make the language non-confrontational.
Yeah, it's hard to be accusatory if you're part of the ones who is both accusing and being accused.
That sounds like a detective show. What about celebrating progress? I can go out and buy a new dress because we made progress this week, right?
I don't think that that's the kind of celebration we're talking about, Evelyn. When couples think about money or they talk about it, they're dealing with problems and it's not fun. And if somebody is spending too much money or not earning enough, then, you know, that can result in an argument and the whole experience feels really negative. So as married couples, we should face these financial challenges and balance it out by creating a culture of encouragement, of gratitude, of celebration. Celebration doesn't mean going out and spending tons and tons of money. You know, you might just go for a nice walk.
You might save dessert until after the kids are in bed and light a candle and have dessert by candlelight.
There you go.
Or have a special dinner that you make for your spouse. Either way, one or the other of you make it. Because if you celebrate the progress on your journey, it's a lot easier to stay focused. If you don't celebrate your progress, it just seems like you're down in the mud forever.
And the celebration part is a huge opportunity to be creative. You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do. It can change things up. And they don't cost a whole lot of money. But it can be add a little bit of excitement to your celebration.
You know what comes to my mind is maybe doing something at the family dinner with the children and having them have the noisemakers like we use on New Year's Eve, where you can say, Mom and Dad paid off a credit card this month, and all the kids go, you know, with the noisemakers. I mean, the kids would love that, and it gets them involved at a level that they can understand about Mom and Dad's finances without really letting them in on the big uglies or the nasty things that are going on. So be creative. Try to involve your kids at the right level, and celebrate when you can, and you look for opportunities to celebrate.
So, Steve, next time we go out to dinner, I'm bringing noisemakers.
You can use them at home tonight with me when we have dinner.
I don't think so. So, financial infidelity. This can be a really challenging matter to overcome in a relationship. You know, it's often a core symptom of two people who really aren't communicating well, and maybe even they have different visions for their future.
And that's why it's so important to talk about money before you get married, because it's going to be a part of life day after day after day after day once you get married. And if you don't talk about it before you get married, you often find yourself in a totally different place than your spouse financially. One of you may be a spender and one of you is a saver. One of you is a giver and one of you is a taker. There's all these different levels of differences that can occur in a marriage based on how you were raised, what your thoughts are, what your experiences are about living on your own. So it's important to get all that out up front before you get married so that you can have good, wholesome, productive discussions about money after you get married.
You know, I think this is a great opportunity to encourage people to go to compasscatholic.org and either download God, Marriage, and Money and read it as a couple and answer the questions and kind of try to get on the same page that way, or download Navigating Your Finances God's Way and just take the 9-week course, just the two of you, if that's all that you can do. Or maybe you can find another couple or two couples and you can sit in your living room around the dining room table or something and kind of go through the course. And if you do that, you're going to bring things out into the open, not your finances in front of anybody. We're not saying that, but you know, as you're going through the homework, you're going to be able to have some discussions
with your spouse
about what's happening. And I think this, or I think that, and it'll put you on a pretty much level playing field then, and it will make things so much easier than what you might have had in the past.
Well, I think the big thing is it's all wrapped in the Word of God, and anytime you're wrapped in the Word of God with your discussions, it's going to be much more productive than if you're just trying to muddle through it on your own.
Moving forward isn't about winning or losing. It's about finding a new direction that works for you. In Mark 10:8, we hear the verse about two will become one flesh. And with that mindset, it's absolutely required in a marriage that even when it comes to finances, you two have to be as one.
So God bless your financial journey, and remember, it's not about the money.
It's about the change of your heart.
And before we leave you today, let's answer an email we received this week. John and Evelyn, I currently tithe on my gross income and receive reimbursement from my employer for college tuition. The question is, should I tithe the reimbursement? I want to honor the Lord and don't know exactly what to do.
The quick answer to your question is yes. I would honor the Lord by giving a tithe on the reimbursement of your college tuition. You know, Proverbs 3:9-10 says, honor the Lord from your wealth, from the first of your increase. And this reimbursement is an increase. It's actually a blessing from God that you're getting it, and you're not having to take the money out of your pocket. I think we should always give against the blessings that he has provided for us.
Because you can't outgive God.
No. And I really appreciate this person's heart to honor Christ in the way he's doing it.
Now, if you have a question or maybe two questions for John and Evelyn, you'd like their help, some advice, email your questions to ask@compasscatholic.org. That's ask@compasscatholic.org. Just a real quick note, John and Evelyn mentioned a book, Your Money Counts, during today's podcast. It's available for free. You can download it free today. Go to compasscatholic.org, click on Books and Studies, and you'll see Your Money Counts. Download it free today. This book will give you an insight into some of these biblical principles that we refer to in our Bible study in navigating your finances God's way. On behalf of John and Evelyn Bean, I want to thank you so much for listening. We post a brand new podcast each and every Wednesday. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we're here from Compass Catholic Ministries.